Welcome to Portrait of a Business. I'm your host, Del Williams. Today we're going to be speaking with Kathy Ireland. Kathy Ireland is a wife, mother, Sunday school teacher, chief designer, and CEO of Kathy Ireland Worldwide. Kathy's mission is finding solutions for families, especially busy moms. Kathy balances her responsibility while leading the brand Forbes, Newsweek, and Wall Street Journal acknowledge as a $1.4 billion design empire. Women's Wear Daily recognizes KIWW as America's seventh most popular in its category. House Beautiful celebrates KIWW as one of the 25 great furniture collections in America. KIWW is the 23rd most powerful licensed brand in the world, according to License Globe magazine. This ranking surpasses Liz Claiborne, Tommy Bahama, and Polo Ralph Lauren. Real solutions are critical because I face a lot of problems. All moms work whether they get paid or not, and we need all the help we can get, says Kathy Ireland, who began her career as a four-year-old designer selling painted rocks from her wagon. Kathy became a supermodel who morphed into someone the Associated Press calls a best friend of working mothers. Let's head into our interview.
Three careers. You've been a model, film actress, and now designer. What gives?
Which one is your favorite
or so?
You're very kind, Del. I could hardly call me an actress. I've got the movies to prove that, too.
Yes, I did look at a trailer for Alien for L.A.
Alien in L.A. Oh, gosh, that was an epic, wasn't it?
I looked at it, I was like, wow.
You know, I had a critic write in after that movie came. It was my very first movie.
Mm-hmm.
I was 24 years old. And it was kind of a take on Journey to the Center of the Earth. And my mom actually cried when she saw it. Other people cry for other reasons, but a critic wrote that I had a voice that could kill small animals. And
that laughed him appropriately.
Well, no, I didn't. I was so shy and I was so, you know, hurt and shy. I didn't do anything. And I should have reached out to him. I should have written to him, because now when people criticize me, I do. And sometimes when I write to them, I thank them because they've shared their opinion. Whether or not I agree with it, they've taken the time to share their opinion. And thank you doesn't mean you agree with it. It simply is acknowledging that they've shared something with you. But sometimes what I've learned is that there can be a smidgen of truth to it. And maybe the message was not delivered in an appropriate way. But it is so much more powerful, because rejection is something I believe we all experience, whether it's stuff from our childhoods, whether it's stuff we're experiencing currently. But we cannot let rejection make us into a bitter brand. And I do say that we are all our own brands. We have a brand today, and people might think I'm nuts saying, you know what, I'm not a brand, I'm a person. Well, yes, you're a person, but you're also a brand. But the question we've got to ask ourselves is, what kind of a brand are we? You know, are we innovative? Are we helpful? Are we cheerful? Do we consider showing up 10 minutes early, being on time, or are we perpetually late? Are we cranky? Are we negative? Do we bring our personal stuff with us? And if so, we've got to make those changes and do it right away. But that just, you know, when you brought up Alien from L.A., it just brought back memories of criticism, and there was some truth to that. I don't imagine many people have ever seen that movie, but my voice is very high in the movie. It's very high, and I did some work on it, not just because of that, but I couldn't even order a pizza. They would say, we need to speak to your mom or your dad, and I said, I'm an adult, and I couldn't even get a pizza. So by listening to that criticism, I was able to discern that there was some truth to it, even though it was delivered in a cruel way, and work through it and use it as a gift. And I never, ever would have believed that public speaking would become any part of my life. My former job description, you mentioned modeling, that job description was to shut up and pose. and then the acting, saying I had a voice that could kill small animals. So it's just, you know, life is interesting, and I'm really grateful for the opportunities. And there's so many opportunities out there, but so oftentimes I think we close doors ourselves, and oftentimes it's our own inner critic. I know I've got one. But it's really kind of getting over that, taking our eyes off ourselves, and moving forward with those dreams. Got to have a plan in place and a timetable, but not letting silly things get in our way.
You said once that you have to re-audition every day. What do you mean by that?
Oh, I audition for my job every day. We can never sit back on yesterday's successes. I was just on the road last week and making phone calls, and yes, I like to think that my cell connection wasn't very good and kept cutting out, but I can't live in denial. I know I got hung up on a couple times here and there. It still happens, but it doesn't mean that we give up or that we stop fighting for what we believe in and working towards accomplishing our goals. But I work very hard, and something I share with our team, you know, it's so interesting. I'm just mindful that if people have an awareness of me at all, it's in a very fragmented kind of way. Some people might think of me as the model person from the last century, and, you know, what's she doing? What's she going to talk to us about? And, you know, sure, I could share some poses or some modeling secrets. My biggest secret is a great photo retoucher, and that's it. But it's, I share with our team constantly. We started our team, our company, in 1993 with a pair of socks, and I tell them if any of us were dependent on any little bit of celebrity that maybe I had in the last century, we'd all be unemployed. And our team knows that to be true. We built a business that has nothing to do with my appearance. It has nothing to do with what I used to do for a living. But it's all about finding solutions for families, especially busy moms.
And how did you come up with that motto?
Well, when our son, our first child, was born, that mission really crystallized because my life changed instantly, dramatically. I mean, suddenly things I had taken for granted, things like taking a shower, became a huge luxury. And I realized very quickly how underserved busy moms are. And again, all moms work whether they get paid or not, and that's something I share a lot. I believe that. I can't think of anything more difficult or important than raising children. And I changed my mind several times growing up what I wanted to do when I grew up, but one thing I always knew I wanted to do was to be a mom. And to be able to be in service to moms, it's wonderful. And I love my boss. I tell people I've got the toughest boss in the world, and I love her, and she's very direct with me. She's right to the point. She is not shy. She tells me when I'm doing it right, and she tells me when I'm not. She tells me when I really need to make some changes, and I love that. I learn from her. The women out there are the biggest, most critical part of our design team, just really keeping me on track and giving me my marching orders, letting me know what direction we need to take the brand. And it's a team effort. It's wonderful.
And you were talking about your team, and you said the other night that when you treat people that you work with the way you want your family treated, great things happen. And your team has been with you, the majority, for over 20 years. How have you managed to do what most companies can't do anymore?
Well, Del, I feel so blessed to work with such an amazing team of people. And you know, I'm the kind of person, it takes a while for me to trust. I've got trust issues, and it takes me a while to trust somebody. And I was very skeptical about this group and really took my time in getting to know them. And sometimes I'd ask myself, you know, are they for real? Are they really this great? And I never had a family business, but today we really do have a business family, and I believe that. I do believe it, when you treat the people you work with the way you'd want your family members treated, there's no limit to what you can accomplish together. We're a very diverse group, and I believe in diversity. I spoke at a diversity conference last week, and diversity is important to me because it's important to God. Because the throne of God is made up of people of every tribe, every tongue, and every nation. And when people are just like us, I find it very boring. I love healthy debate. It causes me to grow and learn. It's important to know where you stand and to know what your values are and to hold firm and hold tight to that. But that shouldn't cause us fear. It's something we need to be very mindful. We don't want anybody leading us away from our values. And if we're not feeling in a strong place, you've got to protect yourself there. But I'm talking about when you're supported and you've got your core values in line to engage with people with different points of view. It's exciting. And it's wonderful with different backgrounds, different life experiences. And I really think that's one of the secrets to our team's success because everyone is bringing something entirely different to the table. Everybody's got a different point of view. If everyone were just like me, it would not work. It would be so boring and it would just be pathetic. But having this diverse team, it's wonderful.
You just received honorary degree, a master's of fine arts? Tell me about that.
Oh, gosh. That was wonderful. That was humbling. It is an honorary degree, and I do share openly that my education, my formal education, ended when I finished high school by the skin of my teeth. But I look at failure as education, and in that respect, I'm very well educated. Our brand was really built with sweat equity, a lot of hard work, and I work with a wonderful team. I've invested in a great team of people. When others were investing in fancy cars and fancy clothes, I was investing in an art director. I know my strengths. I'm also painfully aware of my weaknesses, and I think as women, sometimes we try to do it all. We try to just I can do it. We take on more and more. It's okay to ask for help. It's good to ask for help. And that's why I really love working with a team. And we do have team members who do actually have master's degrees in fine arts. Mine is honorary, and I love it, and I cherish it, and it's a wonderful honor that I love. But I approach design from a busy mom point of view. I know what I need, and I know what moms out there need. They let me know very loud and clear. And, moms want their solutions. They want them now. They want the fashion, the quality, the value, the safety. All those things have got to be in their proper place. So that's where I come at it from. I come at it from a mom point of view. And I'll present my sketches to our design team, and we'll discuss them, we'll talk about them, we'll go back and forth, and then we'll refine them into CAD drawings and just take it one step at a time. And it's wonderful when, just really gifted people are able to take my concepts, my designs, my ideas, and really refine them and turn them into beautiful product.
Some would say that came out of the modeling industry. Why didn't you just do, why are you now into home design? How did you make that leap from fashion to here?
From fashion to?
Home design.
To home design. Well, for me, it was really a natural. We started our brand with socks. And 93, people laughed. They said, "You're crazy. That's impossible. Not going to happen." Love
Didn't
the socks.
Did you start that in your home?
Sorry?
I'm sorry. Didn't you start that in your home?
At my kitchen table. Yep, but sitting at my kitchen table. And actually what happened was someone had offered me an opportunity to model a pair of socks, and now it wasn't as glamorous as it sounds. It was a very small budget, not enough for a photo retoucher, any of that. But it was a job, and it was at a time when not a lot of job opportunities were coming in. And so we started researching it, and I liked the people and thought that socks would be an interesting place to start, because if women embraced our socks, if these people were open to working with me and this little team that we had started putting together, and if we were able to bring our designs to this basic product, innovations, great textures and fabrics and fashion, and if women embraced them, we might be onto something. My dad worked in labor relations. I grew up rallies with Cesar Chavez, and how people are treated has always been at the forefront of my mind. So we did our first surprise factory inspection in North Carolina. You learn a lot when you show up unexpected. And we just love these people. We really love them. We love the product. They're the best socks. We did family-based focus groups. My husband and I went on a backpacking trip. It was before we had kids. And we just, you know, one of our old favorite socks and one of these. We love them. And I took out the first in a series of loans. And it was myself and John Carrasco. He serves as our genius creative director. We hit the road. We loaded our backpacks and we started presenting those socks to retailers. And boy, did those doors slam fast in our faces. It was, you know, just... But one of the gifts, and I didn't realize it at the time, one of the gifts from that long-ago modeling career was all the rejection. Because when those doors slammed in my face and people said, no, you're crazy, it's impossible, it's not going to happen, what are you thinking? It didn't destroy me. I was used to it. And it was like, that's okay. You know, they don't get it yet, but I do, and they will. It might take some time. And I'm really grateful that the women got it. They understood it wasn't a celebrity endorsement. Not that a celebrity endorsement is wrong. It's wonderful if you're a celebrity. But that wasn't my path. It wasn't my interest. And we really built our brand with a grassroots effort. And fashion and apparel, and to answer your question, Della, it translates so easily to home fashions. And what women are seeing on the runways of Paris and Milan, they want translated into their homes in some way, shape, or form immediately. It used to take about 18 months for the fashions of Europe to come to the United States. But with, you know, internet, it's instant.
Now, you, talking about celebrity, some would argue with you and say, yeah, you are a celebrity. Why do you not consider yourself one?
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, all you have to do is, you know, spend a day with me. celebrities, it's difficult for them to go out. It's a very different life. I mean, Del, my emails, nobody wants an autograph. Nobody wants hairstyle tips or beauty advice from me. Or, you know, I don't go to premieres. I don't promote anything except our business. And even that, it's not easy. It's not like, you know, the doors are just wide open. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of concentrated effort to do that. When I go out, people don't stop me. I mean, sure, if there's an event and it's really highlighted and celebrated occasionally, people will have an awareness. But, no, I go out and there's no problem at all. Sometimes people stop me, and it's usually what it is. It's very nice. I bought this lamp, but what rug goes with it? I don't know what rug I should put with it. But it's a very different thing. It's not celebrity.
Forbes called you the latter-day Martha Stewart without the storied bitchiness and felony conviction. What did you think of that?
Oh, gosh. Well, they were being funny. Martha Stewart, my goodness, you know, she is a woman who has built such a powerful brand. And just, she's done an amazing job. And if she had not built a real brand, it would not have survived her personal challenges. But despite the challenges that she went through, her brand is doing great. So she really is a great example of somebody who built a great and a strong brand. And people were asking me when she was serving her time, they were saying, you know, what's going to happen? Is it over for her? And I said, no, she's going to come back stronger than ever. I just knew that she would. Her brand, I take it as a great compliment that Forbes put us in the same sentence together. Our brands are very different. Martha, I mean, you asked earlier about degrees and education. Martha has a master's degree in fine arts, and I'm a busy mom. Martha's homes are gorgeous. They're picture perfect, and our philosophy is life is messy. And rather than being afraid of those messes, we design and develop products that really live the way we do. So it's a different customer, it's a different product, it's a different look. I mean, she used to model years ago too, so we do have that in common. And we both sold products at Kmart. She still does sell products at Kmart. We started in the home industry with flooring, and a few years later she started a flooring program too, and home furnishings and all that, but very different, very, very different, different businesses. Yeah.
Do you think that part of the re-auditioning has more to do with being a woman? I mean, you're at the top of your game, as is Martha Stewart, at the top of her game. And one of the things I see from a lot of women CEOs is there is a different approach, and people take them differently. Some don't take them as seriously, and not necessarily because of the modeling or anything, but just period, because they're women. Do you find that to be a factor?
I do. I see some improvements, but it's something I've experienced my whole life. My first serious job, I was 11 years old. Couldn't wait to be 11 because that was how old you had to be to get a paper route. And when I was just of age, my dad shows me an ad in the local paper that I was to deliver, which read, "Newspaper carrier wanted, are you the boy for the job?" And Dad, having raised three daughters, he knew what kind of reaction that was going to get out of me. I wrote a letter to the editor, and I said, no, I'm not the boy for the job. I'm the girl for the job, and I can do this route just as well as any boy. I deserve a chance. And my first day, it's New Year's Day, papers are extra thick, and I'm a really scrawny 11-year-old. I just remember thinking, what have I gotten myself into? I couldn't even lift the sack over my shoulders. I had to crawl on my belly, stick my head through, as I would pedal my bicycle and get rid of the newspapers in the front of the sack. The weight from the back of the sack would choke me, and I'd fall off my bicycle and start the process over again. My first day, I'm pedaling up this steep hill, and I notice this man, and he's standing on the end of his driveway, and he looks really upset. And as I approached him, I realized he was upset with me, and he just started yelling, and he just said, "What are you doing here? This is a boy's job. You have no business being here. You're never gonna last." And I didn't let him see me cry, but to this day, I'm really grateful to him. Just like earlier we talked about the gentleman who said I had a voice that could kill small animals, and that ended up being a gift. This also was a gift. I disagree with this man's message and his communication skills, but I'm telling you, Del, there were days when I wanted to quit, and I wouldn't give him that satisfaction. And so for 3.5 years, each year I won Carrier of the Year for my district. And my dad always said, give 110%. If the customer expects the paper on the driveway, you put it on the front porch. So that was the foundation of my learning to under-promise and over-deliver. And 30 years plus later, I'm still the girl with a paper route.
Out of all your jobs, which has been the hardest? Modeling, the CEO, acting, which has been
the hardest? Mom, definitely. Because there's so much more at stake. You know, you mess up on a sweater, you mess up on the design of a chair, life goes on. but you know, you bungle your kids. that's not good. So definitely raising our children.
Any of them want to have the bug to go into any of the fields you were in?
I don't know. It's interesting. Our daughter Lily has expressed interest in design, and she's very good. We'll be out, you know, just out at the mall shopping, and she'll see a pair of shoes, and she'll start sketching. You know, we've gotten a habit of bringing a little sketch pad with us. And she'll get inspired by the shoes, and she'll come up with a top of bed, you know, beautiful quilt and pillows, and she'll see different things in them. She'll photograph flowers, and she'll come up with different patterns and designs. So she really has a great eye for design. Lily's 10 years old. Chloe, who is 6, and she's home today with the chicken pox. I mean, this morning she did these beautiful dresses with matching hats, and they're beautiful. So she's young. It may change, but definitely they've expressed some interest in design. And our son, Eric, who will be 15 on Saturday, it'll be interesting to see. He's got great interest in photography, great interest in marketing, interest in design as well, but I see him kind of leaning more towards the production end and the marketing end, and he's also very musical too. Actually, all our kids are. So we'll see. It'll be interesting.
Now, you said, love you said, right? Love you said. Let's see. You said that you wanted to talk about how plans change even with intent. What does that mean?
I'm sorry, Del, I couldn't hear you.
How plans change even with intent.
Oh, yes. One of the only constants in life is change. And it's something that it is so much more powerful to anticipate change, to initiate change, rather than be forced to react to it. And just being alert, being aware, and being adaptable, it's powerful, and it's an important way to live.
Okay. You've been considered one of the 50 most influential people in fashion. Your company's earned 5 Good Housekeeping Awards. You've got Mother of the Year Award. I believe AP called you a best friend to working mothers. How do you do it all?
Well, I don't. and I don't do it well every day. I've got plenty of days where I'm a complete disaster. And I certainly don't do it alone. I work with an amazing team. A team of geniuses. I love our team, and they make it possible. Our brand bears my name, but it's the result of thousands of hours of work performed by many, many people. So, no, it's not like I just do it all. And many people ask me, well, you know, how do you do it all, and can women have it all? And I do believe we can have it all, but not all at once. I really believe our lives come in seasons. And at every season of our life, we've got to prioritize our time. And that means stopping and thinking about what's important to you. What are your values? What are your priorities? And then putting boundaries in place to protect those values, those priorities. For me, my priorities are my faith, my family, and then finding solutions for families, especially busy moms. And Del, when my priorities are out of whack, it's so obvious. I'm just a mess. I'm a disaster. I'm not effective at anything. Coping skills are out the window. The stress is unmanageable. So I've got to live my priorities. And I have a quick fix, because I don't have a lot of time for stuff. But I just get a big sheet of paper. I get out my Sharpie pen, and I write J-O-Y. And besides the J, it's Jesus. And under the J is the O, and that's others. And under the O is the Y, and that's you. So Jesus others you. And that's a quick fix to make sure my priorities are in line. If I'm not feeling the joy, I just look and think, okay, do I need to rearrange something? And every time, that's the case.
Hmm. Now, you talk a lot about your faith. How did that come about, and how is it influencing how you do business? I mean, yeah.
My faith is the cornerstone and the foundation of my life. I never want to exploit my faith. At the same time, it's who I am, so it's really difficult to communicate with people without it coming up. I had somebody return the book. She was upset because she didn't know that, you know, she said, oh, there's so much faith stuff in here. And, you know, and I was sorry that she felt misled, but I dedicate the book to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. So that's a little bit of a telling tale. And I don't necessarily think of the book as a faith-based book. However, that's where I go to. That's my source, who I go to in every situation in life. So it's impossible for me to separate it, to take it out. I came to my faith. I don't remember a time that I didn't believe in God. However, I didn't know him. I didn't have a close relationship with him. We never had Bibles in our home growing up. When I was 18, my mom had become a Christian a year earlier, and I was in Paris. I had just started modeling, and it sounds so much more glamorous than it was. I was staying in a home where I didn't feel comfortable. It was late at night. I had jet lag, and I couldn't sleep, and boredom and loneliness, all that set in, and it caused me to pull a Bible out of my suitcase that my mom had packed in there without telling me, and never looked at one before. You know, maybe at the doctor's office, the picture Bibles, but that was really it. I randomly opened up to the Gospel of Matthew, and I started reading. And as I was reading, I just felt that my heart was being transformed. And I knew at that moment that I was holding the truth in my hands. And I was in an age, I was a teenager, I was rebellious, I was questioning authority. Well, who really knows what's right and what's wrong? And there was the truth right there in my hands. And as a young woman in a world that felt dominated by men of questionable character, it was so encouraging for me to learn about Jesus and how he loves women, and how he values them, and to just that he chose a woman to give birth to his son, that Jesus chose a woman, and a Samaritan woman at that, and this was at a time when Jews and Samaritans, they would go miles out of their way to have to associate. And it was in a time and a place, a culture where women were second-class citizens. Men didn't talk to women. This woman came to the well at midday. You know, she was an outcast. The other woman, they would have come in the morning or in the evening. But she came on her own in the middle of the day. She was unaccepted. She was living a life in open sin. And he confronted her on it. He talked with her about it. He knew everything about her, and he still loved her, and he valued her, and he chose this woman to be the first one that he told that he was the Son of God, and that women were the first to see him after the resurrection, and that encouraged me so much. It gave me strength to walk off jobs when I felt I was being asked to compromise. And I've made so many mistakes, and I continue to make so many mistakes. I'm a painfully slow learner, and I regret that. One of the things I would do, I'd read my Bible, and certain passages I would love and I would hang on to. And then others I would say, oh, well, that must be a typo or that doesn't pertain to me. And I was trying to mold God into what I wanted him to be. I was trying to make my own God. I mean, that's just crazy. It's arrogant. It's crazy. It's wrong. Rather than submit myself to him and let him mold me into the person he created me to be. And I'm so grateful that we serve a God that is just so big, limitless in love, in forgiveness, in grace, and that in spite of ourselves, he still loves us. And, you know, we don't, it's not our works that get us, you know, to God. It's, you know, not by our works that anyone should boast. And it's through his grace and his love. And all we have to do is accept it. And that is such a powerful gift.
True. You recently were talking about your weight issue.
Yes. And
I was going to ask you about that, but in a different context. Women, girls, little girls, are being influenced often by what they see on TV, by what they see on the magazines and so forth, and the problems with anorexia and bulimia are still out of control. And I believe it was, what, a couple of years ago that they were trying to do this thing where, you know, the models had to weigh a certain amount in order to actually, you know, model and so forth. How do you get around, you know, because we are constantly being judged by our weight, our looks, and so forth. How do you get around that or deal with that?
You know, it's, we talk about it and we communicate to girls and boys that it's not about our appearance. And there's such an unhealthy obsession with physical appearance. And when I modeled, I was, you know, I never missed a meal. I was never really thin. You didn't see me out there on the runway. That, you know, I figured if they like me for who I am, great. If not, I'll do something else for a living. I tried many, many businesses and failed before starting our company and modeled much longer than I had planned to. One of the frustrating elements of that career was unattainable looks, unattainable prices. And my girlfriends used to give me grief, and they'd say, well, we're letting you get away with it now, but when you have your own brand, you better make it real. And, you know, don't forget about us. And when it was around the holidays, our son had a camera and he was taking pictures, got a picture of me, and he was sweetly, innocently, just kind of chuckling. And our daughter, who was 5, she ran and looked and she said, Mommy, you look like you're pregnant. And I looked at the image and it was shocking. It was really shocking, and not the weight gain, because there's no shame in a weight gain, and beautiful people come in all shapes and sizes, colors and ages. But what I saw was someone who was just overwhelmed and overstressed and over everything, and someone who was not taking her own advice. It is so much easier to teach and give advice than it is to take your own advice. So I don't want anyone to think that I'm sitting here with all the answers and I've got this perfect life, because it's hard for me too. We're in this journey together. But the first word in the title of the book is real. Real solutions for busy moms. And I was tempted to hit delete. But that photo that our son took, that was real. The image on the cover of the book, it's a lovely retouched photo. But what he took was real. And I don't like hypocrisy. I don't like secrets. And it's, but you know what's interesting, though, is I thought the article in People Magazine, I thought they were very kind. But since then, there have been so many questions like, well, are you going to squeeze into a bikini again? And have you come to peace with your appearance? It's like, first of all, I don't get my peace from my appearance. I didn't get my peace from my appearance when I modeled. If that was the case, I'd be in big trouble. And am I going to squeeze into a bikini? I mean, please, that's so irrelevant. And no, it's not. it's not about that and what kind of messages are we sending to our kids. But what people weren't asking me, well, how's your health? You know, it's an extra 25 pounds can take 10 years off your life. And, you know, the metabolic syndrome, diabetes, high cholesterol, C-reactive protein levels, heart disease is the number one killer of women in America. And what I share in the book is when you get on an airplane, one of the first things a flight attendant says is, put your own oxygen mask on first, then you can help those around you. And, you know, here I am telling other women, you know, make time for yourself, too. As women, we feel selfish and guilty if we take any time to care for ourselves. We're nurturers. We're taking care of everybody. And when we say our family is our priority, frequently we forget we're a member of that family, too. And it was a real wake-up call for me because I could see what was coming down the road. If I kept on that path, I could see, you know, when menopause kicks in, 50, then 60, it wasn't going to be good if I kept on that path. And I intend to be healthy and strong. I want to be there for our kids and keep up with them and do things. I mean, people are counting on me, and I want to be there for them. And so it's more selfish to not take care of my health. And I had to learn that the hard way.
Yeah. If somebody was coming to you, they're brand new, spanky new, shiny eyes, saying, I want to start a business, what would you say? Or what would you advise?
I would say that's wonderful. And I'd say you've got to answer some questions, though. You got to know what it is that you're doing, who you're serving, who is your customer. Know everything about your customer that you can. Be curious. Ask questions. Make sure that you have a passion for what it is that you're doing, that you really, you know, feel led, that this is your path. You know, if you're a person of faith, I just suggest first thing you do is to pray about it. And you've got to come up with a plan. You've got to come up with a strategy, and you've got to have a timetable. Because without that strategy and without that timetable, your dream will remain just that. It will stay forever a dream. But when you have the plan and you have the timetable and you're able to answer those questions, you can move that from a dream into a reality.
And final question is, 10 years from now, what will we be hearing about Kathy Arnold?
Well, 10 years from now, you know, the beauty of our mission statement, finding solutions for families, especially busy moms, there's always going to be solutions that we're going to need to find. So I'm going to be taking my marching orders from my boss, and she's going to be leading me where I need to go.
Cool. And thank you so much for doing this interview and being with me.
Oh, Del, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it, and thank you so much for inviting me.
You're welcome.